Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Oh, to be an oil executive.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. I doubt the people who run big oil companies mind paying $4 for gas. They're making gobs of money. This morning, Shell reported a record profit, $9 billion for the first quarter. BP made $6.5 billion, a 48% increase from last year. The price of oil is down a tad this morning, but it's still at $118 a barrel. Oil company shares are, not surprisingly, up in Europe, but bank stocks are losing value once again. Deutsche Bank, for one, reported more write-downs. So far, the European markets are mixed. Stocks in Asia saw minor gains for the most part. The dollar strengthened against the euro and most other currencies. The Dow is at 12,871. It fell 20 points yesterday. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 stayed about the same. Grocery shopping has gotten more expensive all over the world. In Britain, it's possible the price increases aren't all from natural causes. The government is looking into price fixing, and some American companies could be involved. Our man in London, Stephen Beer, joins us. Stephen, what's the deal here?
Well, the Office of Fair Trading here is investigating allegations that the big four supermarket chains in the UK have been colluding with suppliers to fix prices. And we're talking about a very wide range of goods here: groceries, health and beauty products, razor blades, batteries, soap powder, and involving some big American names such as Coca-Cola, Procter and Gamble. The suspicion is here that the supermarkets have been talking with the suppliers, and between them, they've been taking advantage in the very steep increase in raw material prices to move together and to push up their retail prices.
How are investigators to know that it's not just the cost of raw materials?
Well, they'll look at the exact price increases involved, and they'll also look for evidence of collusion. Already, the Office of Fair Trading has apparently seized emails between the supermarket chains and their suppliers.
And is this just a British investigation?
As far as we know, it is just a British investigation. But as we found with the British Airways price-fixing case last year, there was a direct link to the US. However, the OFT does have the power to fine these companies up to 10% of their annual sales.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Today, the Federal Reserve kicks off a two-day meeting. Tomorrow, the Fed will decide whether to drop interest rates once again. Perhaps the economy could use another cut. But then again, oil is at $118 a barrel, food prices are sky high, inflation is a major concern. More now from Nancy Marshall Genzer.
The Fed has been trying to keep the inflation monster at bay since it started cutting interest rates last September. Inflation loves falling rates. When they're low, more people borrow, and it's hard not to spend that easy money. Demand for stuff goes up, and so do prices. Now, former Fed economist Doug Elmendorf says the Fed is walking a fine line because the inflation monster is already stirring.
Oil prices and gasoline prices have increased more than people expected a few months ago.
So is the Fed worried enough about inflation to stop cutting rates? Probably not, although we do seem to be at a tipping point. Morris Davis is also a former Fed economist. He expects one more rate cut, and then...
Unless there's some really, really bad and unexpected economic news, there probably won't be any change in the interest rates for at least 6 months.
Concerns were raised about inflation at the Fed's March meeting, but the Fed went ahead with an interest rate cut anyway. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The United Nations Security Council meets today to talk about Zimbabwe. We still don't know who won Zimbabwe's elections, and they were a month ago. Voters are pretty anxious to know whether Robert Mugabe will stay in office or not. Gretchen Wilson looks at the economic implications.
Analysts say a win for Mugabe would likely deepen the economic crisis. One reason? Inflation. Mugabe's government prints money at supersonic speeds, making it difficult for businesses or consumers to keep up. Cash is quickly traded for food, gasoline, or other commodities that will hold their value. Food is so scarce that one-fifth of the population relies on international food aid, and Western businesses and international lending bodies have largely pulled out of Zimbabwe under Mugabe's rule. Dale McKinley is a political analyst in Johannesburg.
So it's gone beyond crisis point. I think the question on everybody's minds is, how low can one go before this implodes and explodes?
Western countries, including Australia, Norway, and Sweden, have said they'll pony up cash to rebuild Zimbabwe's economy if the vote is deemed transparent and democratic, and if the government revamps its fiscal policies. There could be a broader fallout if Mugabe claims another victory. The opposition party and international human rights groups say post-election violence threatens to destabilize the region. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Advertisers are having a tough time keeping up with us these days. We can TiVo commercials away and ignore a lot of them on the web. But advertisers never give up. Commentator Rob Walker says now things are getting personal.
Everybody complains about advertising. But lately, advertisers have actually been paying attention. Apparently, they've gotten hip to the idea that most of us say we're less influenced by ads than by our trusted friends. So the new goal is to convert our trusted friends, or at least people we know, into an advertising medium. Here's an example of what I mean. Marketers for Nip Tuck, a TV show about plastic surgeons, have created a Facebook application designed to encourage users to pit their own attractiveness against that of their friends. The idea is the application spreads from friend to friend and promotes Nip Tuck as it goes. Another gimmick for the show allows you to use audio files of Nip Tuck characters to create a custom message telling your friends what kind of plastic surgery you think they need. You then leave that message on your pal's voicemail, like so.
Robert, don't worry. We can help you. Your dreams of being hotter than the competition and looking like a rock star are just a nip and a tuck away.
Some ad guru types call this friendvertising. Maybe you wouldn't feel so friendly after getting that plastic surgery voicemail, but we all know one jerk with access to our cell phone number or Facebook profile who thinks this kind of stuff is hilarious. So maybe we should really call this new marketing form jerkvertising. But let's face it, at some point you've probably gotten an email from an actual trusted friend pointing you to a funny video or website that you just have to check out. And maybe it really is funny, but often it's also an ad for something. You and I might have mixed feelings about friendvertising or jerkvertising, but marketers love it. They can finally stop pestering us with their dubious claims and let all of our friends do it for them.
Rob Walker writes the Consumed column for the New York Times Magazine. His book, Buying In, will be published in June. Would you like your job better if no one was allowed to gossip in your office? I'm asking because one Chicago company has put a stop to it. Stacey Vanek-Smith has our story.
Anyone who has ever camped out at the water cooler to get the latest knows that office gossip is one of the great American pastimes. But it's all fun and games until it's about you. Take the reaction of boss David Brent on the BBC's The Office.
They've given you a nickname.
What is it?
Well, I don't really know.
Come on. What is it?
Bluto.
The villain from Popeye.
I can't believe it.
Don't go on. They know it's me that told you.
To avoid these kinds of situations, Sam Chapman banned gossip at his company Empower Public Relations. Three repeat offenders actually lost their jobs. After that, Chapman says, it was easy to get everybody to clam up.
There's nothing like a good old-fashioned firing to change people's attitudes.
Chapman claims gossip was interfering with productivity. That happens at a lot of offices, says workplace consultant Sandra Crow, author of Since Strangling Isn't an Option.
People feel like they can't trust each other. You know, this person's talking about me. Then morale usually slips.
Still, Crow says, outlawing gossip could backfire.
Whenever you ban something, people have a resentment. And so what you often get are these retaliations that come up.
And what about the big brother aspect?
It's any employer's right to expect that you treat each other professionally. And putting some more intelligible boundaries around what professional behavior is all that I'm doing.
Chapman says a ban on gossip also means addressing things people gossip about, like salaries. They're transparent at his company. And if people aren't allowed to talk behind your back, you'd better be available to talk face-to-face. So Chapman makes time to talk with workers about their concerns. As far as day-to-day enforcement, Chapman largely relies on employees to rat each other out. And when they do?
I run, yell, and tell, just like they tell kids at school. I invite the person who gossiped to go clean it up. And then I follow behind them and clean it up myself.
Chapman says teamwork has never been better and Empower is landing bigger clients. He can rest easier, too. Chapman says the ban began after he heard gossip about himself. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Yesterday, we talked about BSing in the workplace. And in making a point, our guest said no one in the history of the world had washed a rental car. Well, listener Brad Brooks Rubin in Tacoma Park, Maryland, wrote in to correct that statement.
I was on this 10,000-mile road trip. I had a white rental car, and the car was just painful to look at after a while. It was just covered in dirt and dead bugs and all kinds of other stuff. And I don't know. Something came over me, and I just decided that it was the right thing to do to get the car washed.
And I understand at your wedding, your best man brought this up.
He did. He was with me. He was probably the chief person who teased and jabbed me about having done this, and he decided that nothing would bring the house down more during my toast than to raise the fact that I was probably the first person in the history of the world to get a rental car washed.
Well, you know what, Brad? That probably says a lot of good things about you.
Well, I hope so.
All right, Brad. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
You can find Brad's story at the Marketplace Confessional online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.